Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order the Audit, Compliance, and Title IX Committee meeting of November 30th at 10:26 a.m. They heard me.
Excuse us.
Okay. If I can have the roll call, please, Angela.
Chair Perkins.
Here.
Vice Chair Arascada. Regent Boylan.
Yes, ma'am.
Regent Cruz Crawford.
Present.
Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you. Let's see. Let's start with public comment. For those who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID number 928-4944-5069, and the passcode is 555555. I will ask for any, is there any public comment at GBC?
There is no public comment at GBC at this time.
Thank you. Is there any public comment at System Office in Reno?
There is none at this time.
Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas at UNLV?
Good morning, Chair Perkins, Vice Chair Arascada, Regents, Chief Auditor Tripp, Kent Irvin, ERVIN, past President and Director of Government Relations, Nevada Faculty Alliance. I would like to comment on Agenda Item 6, the overall NSH financial statements. I'm sure the auditors have done their jobs, but I would like to provide some context. As I commented earlier this morning at the Budget and Finance Committee, the annual NSHE budget reports on state operating budgets and self-supporting budgets do not include a lot of the revenue and expenditures for which you see total amounts in the financial statements. The functional and program categories of expenditures are not reported from gifts, for grants, and for any self-supporting accounts under $250,000. The NSHE financial statements for FY 2023 show $2.06 billion, with a B, in total revenue for NSHE. The state operating budget revenue is about half, $1.065 billion. The reported self-supporting budget revenue is $600 million. That leaves $375 million in FY 23 that isn't reported to the regents as to how it was spent by function or program type. About $100 million of that is probably student fees, although that's hard to determine from the public reports. The bottom line is that the audited financial statement that this committee sees are comprehensive, but they are not intended to provide information about how funds are either restricted or designated and how the funds are spent by function and program type. The supporters of SJR 7 complain about a lack of accountability at NSHE. Being more transparent with the overall budgets would be a step in the right direction. Without full reporting, it is hard to counter the opinion of some legislators that NSHE has plenty of money available. I hope these comments are constructive. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further public comment here at UNLV? And with that, we'll move on to, is there any public comment on the phone?
There are no online callers at this time.
Thank you. For the consent items, item number 2, if I would like to entertain a motion.
So moved.
Thank you, Regent Boylan, for the first. And do I have a second?
Second.
Regent Del Carlo for the second, or Vice Chair Del Carlo for the second. You're Vice Chair here. Okay, I'm off kilter. Okay, thank you, Regent Del Carlo. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing none opposed, that motion carries unanimously. Moving on to the chair's report, item number 3. I will be very brief because this agenda is pretty well packed with lots of information, and I want to leave as much time as possible for questions. At the forefront, thank you to Interim Chief Internal Auditor Lauren Tripp for making sure that I understood what was going on, as well as her dedication to these reports that we're about to hear. Secondly, about Grant Thornton, and thank you for all their continued support of INCHI and all the hard work they do to compose these reports that are legible and full, chock full of information. So thank you for that. Item number four, the internal audit compliance and Title IX updates for information only. I'll just say interim CIA chief at Tripp.
There we go. Thank you, Chair Perkins. I'm going to try to make this as fast as possible, but I do have a lot to say. So this has been a standing item where we can provide some departmental updates and, more importantly, have a placeholder to discuss anything related to risk. It's been used to discuss in the past financial aid-related findings, risk assessment methodologies, and discuss work the department is completing towards other board initiatives. As you may have noticed, there aren't any audit reports for us to go through on this agenda for approval, other than the follow-up audits the committee has just approved. But no worries, this can happen sometimes, and it's just a timing issue. I'm expecting quite a few reports to be presented at the next meeting. I have a few items to discuss, and then after that, our external auditors will be going over agenda items 5 through 8. They're really the star of this agenda, so I'm going to try to move this along as fast as I can. So in the meantime, I really appreciate the committee's time. The first item I want to discuss will be the longer of the two items. This involves an update related to the incident management system. I am going to use the term hotline interchangeably just because it's easier, honestly, for me to say than incident management system over and over again. So I'm going to go through a few things before I jump into the attachment and the data there. I'm going to go over the submissions flow, try to clear up some areas that have caused a bit of confusion, some highlights of the briefing memo, and what I see going forward for the future. To start, I think it might be helpful to remind the committee on how submissions flow through to accumulate and present the data you see in the attachment. So what will happen is the party submitting the confidential report has the option to call or submit something through the online portal. We will receive notification that there's a new case, and I'll continue to use the term case as well. And by this, I mean the party's concern, the submission. We have a large range of concerns that come through to us, everything from personnel concerns to grade or financial aid discrepancies. And I'll get to talking a little bit later on if we're really the right place for those kind of concerns. Internal audit assists by helping triage these submissions. When a new submission comes in, we need to determine who best can assist in helping to follow up with that concern. So typically this is a subject matter expert. So say, kind of using a couple ones I just said, if we have a financial aid concern that comes through, the subject matter expert would be financial aid director. We maintain a log on our end notating things such as who we sent the information to and when, if it's open or closed, the category such as financial, HR, safety related. We use the spreadsheet to track the cases and trends to help create the charts you see today. The next item I want to discuss is to talk a little bit about things that may be creating some confusion increasing over the last few years. I'm just hoping this may be helpful to clarify what the hotline is and isn't. I feel like at times it's been confusing for some, and they think, is this the right place or not for the submission? My hope is that by me presenting it in this way, it'll be helpful to the committee and others to understand the hotline a little better and what our role is. I'll also add that this is in no way to discourage anyone from submitting something to the hotline. If you think we're the place, submit. It's just I'm wanting to mention some things I feel like I've seen that have created a bit of confusion, and there might be a better resource out there other than us. Since its inception, we have always encouraged a potential reporting party that if there are resources on campus or in-house, it's best to try to start with those resources. Now, perhaps you don't feel comfortable, there's too many close ties, you just don't feel comfortable, and that's where we come in as that additional resource. Something that I realize can be a bit frustrating is that not all cases are going to result in us, and by us I mean INCHI internal audit, performing our own audit investigation. As noted in the chart on page 3 of the attachment, you can see that HR-related cases are a majority of our cases at 68%. Lots of times, these are personnel-related concerns, which honestly isn't our lane. This is where we must rely on the subject matter experts, and we've built some pretty good relationships on the campuses with groups such as Title IX, Legal, HR, and other individuals that are better able to help review and resolve these issues. Sometimes those will result in outside investigations, but not for 100% of those. Another item to clarify and reiterate is we aren't designed to override decisions made by a campus. So an example I can think of is changing grades on an assignment. And lastly, I think there's some increase in confusion just in general what this was designed to be. So we are meant to be an additional resource, not an all-inclusive hotline. So by that, I mean there are cases going on at the institutions that they're handling and we're not involved in. Those won't be included in these numbers. And honestly, we just don't have the staffing to even try to attempt to do that, I'll be honest. But going back once again to that was never the intent of this hotline. Its intent was to be an additional resource to complement what's already available. So so far, that's kind of just the general intake from to Excel process and tracking, trying to clarify some items. I'm going to pause there for a second before I jump into statistics in the future.
If there's any questions from the committee or anyone in attendance.
Cool. Okay, thank you. Okay, so now I'll jump a bit into the attachment a little bit more. I guess Lauren Tripp, Interim Chief Internal Auditor. Typically, we do this update in the June meeting after the benchmark report comes out. As you're aware, there's been some turnover within the department, which is why it's been pushed to this meeting. Navix is a company that helps administer our hotline and third-party web service. They provide some global benchmarking information that's released in a report. So it was about 70 pages this year. We were able to include some high-level trends and comparisons in the attached briefing memo that's associated with this update, and I'm not going to read that report word for word, but I did want to highlight a couple of benchmarks from the recent report against what we're doing here at NCHE. So from a volume perspective, the benchmark information stated that reporting is at an all-time high, but reporters are proceeding with more caution. So this aligns with what we're seeing from our hotline. Pre-COVID, we're averaging about 12 cases per quarter up till quarter two 2020. From quarter three 2020 to quarter two 2022, 6 cases per quarter. And starting quarter three 2022 until present, we are averaging 23 cases per quarter. And that's through, the data's through September 25th, 2023. And that's in the attachment. Another trend I wanted to point out in the benchmark report is anonymous reporting. For 2022, we had a greater number of anonymous cases at 72%, which was above the median anonymous reporting rate of 56% from the benchmarking data. For 2023, 45% of the reports filed have been anonymous, and overall since inception, 57% have been anonymous. So it's important to know that that option exists because sometimes that ability to remain anonymous encourages someone who might not otherwise submit something to submit their concern. It's also a best practice feature to have that option. Something new for this year, the benchmarking report also was updated to now include another category. So this year's chart reflects that. And to finish off the hotline portion and to just give a brief update, we're coming up on 5 years since its implementation, and we're in the last few months of our initial contract period. We are currently going through the process of reviewing and renegotiating a new contract. As we go through the process, I don't anticipate any gaps with our current service provider. If there does happen to be one specifically with the current intake platform, there will be something else in place to submit concerns. So I just don't want anybody to be concerned that there won't be an outlet. There will still be a resource. Also, as part of this process, we have now accumulated enough data at this point where it would be in our best interest to perform some additional assessments. As you all know, I've only been involved in this process for a brief period. One of the numbers that concerns me a bit while I was compiling our data is the substantiation rate for our hotline. Where in the past we were closer to the benchmark substantiation rate, this year we have a bigger gap between us and the benchmark. So by substantiation, I mean these are reports that when investigated proved to be correct or partially correct, whereas unsubstantiated, that's when they're proved to be inaccurate or reported or they can't be proven to be true. So the benchmark report notates the overall substantiation rate remain stable year over year between 40 to 44%, and this hasn't been the case with us. During our last presentation at the June 2022 meeting, there was a rate of 33%, and currently we're holding at 27%. So with 5 years of data, I see this as an opportunity and a great time to perform an overall review of the hotline. So basically, let's review the whole flow. What were we trying to accomplish when we set up the hotline? Why was it created? Are we meeting those goals? If we are there things we could do better? If we're not meeting those goals, what are our options? This was originally supposed to be managed by a compliance individual, and then it got shifted to internal audit 100%. So is this the right structuring to be the most efficient and effective? The hotline has morphed over time, where it does take up a significant amount of my and a team member's time than when this first went live. So do we need to approach this differently? I've seen it structured a multitude of different ways. So there's different ways to do it, but is this the best way that we can go about, the most helpful way to the party submitting their concerns? And I think this analysis would be helpful to the board to better understand the hotline. And I also think it'd shed some light on some areas that maybe we didn't consider. And I'll stop there because I just know I threw a whole bunch of hotline out there. So stop there, and then I have one more thing after that.
Thank you. Are there any questions, concerns, comments? Okay, seeing none, carry on.
Okay. The other item I want, Lauren Tripp, Interim Chief Internal Auditor. The other item I want to briefly mention is to discuss what's on the horizon. So as required by purchasing policies and procedures, purchasing will solicit formal bids, RFPs, requests for proposals, for purchases of goods and services when the aggregate total of a purchase exceeds a certain threshold. So this process also includes our external auditors. The last RFP for our external auditors was performed back in 2019, and our current external auditors at the time, Grant Thornton, were selected to remain our auditors. We are now on year 5 of 5 of that contract. It runs by fiscal year completion. As you may or may not know, Grant Thornton, they've actually been our auditors since 2009. The general high-level timeline of this is the RFP process. There's a committee that's been formed with a mix of individuals typically involved in the audit to provide their input. So this includes financial aid directors, controllers, auditors, former auditors. The RFP should be issued within the next week. I don't want to say today because I thought it was today, but within the next week. And there will be an application window, and the finalists will come and present at a future meeting for selection. So the last thing, and I'm talking a lot, sorry. The last thing I want to say is, because I'm not sure if I'll get another chance, and it's from a personal level because I've never been in this seat, is I just wanted to thank Grant Thornton for including me as part of their student financial aid team over the years. I've learned a lot, created some amazing relationships out at the institutions that I don't think I would have otherwise. I also partially blame them for my love-hate relationship for financial aid because I both find it interesting and super frustrating at times. So I just really wanted to thank them because I didn't know where I'd be able to squeeze that in. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tripp. And I want to squeeze that in too, that the process was suggested by a previous board member just so we can remain on top of things and make sure that we're getting the best person for our being responsible and transparent, basically. And this is no reflection on Grant Thornton. They have been wonderbar. So I just want to put that in there, that this is not a reflection on any of the outstanding work that they've done for us. Thank you. Moving on to item number 5, communications with those in charge, and I'll turn it over to Ms. McCormick from Grant Thornton.
Good morning, Regents. Chair Perkins, happy to be with you today to talk about the annual audits of Nevada System of Higher Education. We're going to start with agenda item number 5. By the way, Kim McCormick, for the record, Grant Thornton. We're going to start with agenda number 5 and supplemental material item number 5. And we're going to start first talking about the Nevada System of Higher Education and the two audits that you all have engaged us to perform. Each year, there is a financial statement audit. So this one is for the year ended June 30, 2023. I'll make a few comments about that audit first that are summarized in this report. So this is an audit that all systems have across the United States, and the purpose of it is to see that you've prepared these external financial statements in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. And at the end, we render an opinion in terms of whether or not we think you've complied with those rules. The financial statements themselves will be in our next agenda item, but those are the subject matter of the audit. We focus a lot of our attention on the big numbers in those financial statements, so the revenue sources, the state appropriations, the tuition revenue, and other revenue sources. Also, there's big items on your balance sheet or your statement of net position, inclusive of pension obligations and post-retirement benefit obligations. And I wanted to mention that in particular because you do have one figure on your financial statement. It's an obligation with respect to providing post-employment health benefits to employees. And it is a sizable number. It's a $584 million liability. And that is a figure that is actually computed by another party, by PEBS, another state agency. And so there is great reliance on PEBS calculation and the fact that they have their own audit that INSHI relies on. Unfortunately, this year the timing hasn't worked out such that PEBS has had their audit complete yet. So we're all in a little bit of a wait mode, and we've been working around that. And whenever that audit's done, then we can finish our work and issue our final reports. But that's really the key hold item for that particular audit. The second audit that we conduct is an audit of federal awards under federal uniform guidance. The organization has a big list of all the federal grants and contracts that you administer during the course of the year. It's called the Schedule of Expenditure of Federal Awards. That schedule is also in our next agenda item. That schedule is the starting point for the audit that's required by the federal government, and they have a formula to decide which of the awards in that big list are going to undergo a compliance audit each year. This year, 7 of those awards met that criteria. The criteria is really a combination of the size of the award, the risk profile of that particular award, and also whether it's been audited in the last couple years. So the good news is for the 7 programs that we've been auditing, that they're all clean. We anticipate issuing clean, unmodified reports on those. We do have a handful of findings. We'll talk about that in our next agenda item. One hold item for that particular audit is that the management of all the schools is reevaluating whether there's one program that should be added to that list, and it's of a size that if it does need to be added, it may need to be audited as the 8th major program. So we're just pending that decision, and as soon as we know if it does need to be audited, we'll get started on that straight away. Any comments, questions on agenda item number 5?
Any comments or questions? Thank you. Carry on.
All right. Moving on to agenda item number 6. So these are the financial statements themselves of the Nevada System of Higher Education. This is a big packet, includes the financial statements prepared in accordance with GAAP, U.S. GAAP. It includes that big schedule of expenditures of federal awards that I mentioned a moment ago, but it also includes the auditor's reports. All of our reports are in there in draft form because we can't finalize it yet for the reasons I mentioned a moment ago, but we do envision rendering clean and modified reports, and so the examples of what those look like are included in the packet. One of the byproducts of the audit each year is if there are internal control matters that we think should be brought to the attention of this committee, we do include those in that reporting package. So well into the document, it actually starts on page 306 of 321, We have three findings that have been reported. The first has to do with that schedule of expenditures of federal awards. We noticed that there was some completeness and accuracy problems with that document when it was originally submitted to be audited, and a number of corrections needed to be made for it to be complete and accurate. So our recommendation there is that controls be enhanced to ensure that completeness and accuracy for the future. The second finding that we have relates to the federal award audit, and in particular, the student financial assistance major program. That's one of your biggest federal programs. We have two findings. They are both repeat findings from the prior year. The first has to do with some segregation of duties issues with respect to the IT systems, the PeopleSoft system that's used to administer the program. The good news on that finding is while it repeated for fiscal 23, a lot more positive efforts have been made to remediate that, so it's looking likely that that one may fall off the list for next time for 2024. So that's good news there. And then the third finding also has to do with student financial assistance cluster, and this has to do with one of the very complicated rules about what happens when a student who receives aid leaves the institution midterm, and they have to return some of that aid. And there's some complicated calculations and some timing that goes with that, and so there were a couple of instances we noted where the timing was not appropriate for those particular calculations and the return of aid, and so that ended up being a finding as well. But in perspective, again, all our reports will be unmodified, clean opinions, and we look forward to being able to wrap that up once the all the hold items come in.
Any questions? I have one. You mentioned that because of PEBS, any idea of when they will complete their part that pours into our report?
Kim McCormick with Grant Thornton for the record. We have heard through management that their audit has not started yet, that it's scheduled to start sometime in December. And so we don't have certainty as to when it's going to be complete, but we're all anxiously following it as it transpires.
Thank you for that. And next item, I think.
All right. We are now moving on to agenda item number 7. So we're going to switch gears now and now talk about UNLV Health, UNLV Medicine doing business as UNLV Health. We do conduct a standalone financial statement audit for this organization. This, of course, is the practice plan associated with UNLV's School of Medicine. Unlike the broader INSHE audit, the UNLV Medicine audit is just a financial statement audit. And so our first document outlines what that entails, our areas of focus, as you might imagine, the patient revenue cycles, the receivable cycles, and the judgments that are made by management in terms of collectability of receivables and contractual allowances on those
Excuse me, Ms. McCormick, I made a chair faux pas. That last item, item number 6, was actually for possible action. And because we have to accept it in draft form, does that need to, what is the exact wording that needs to happen? So I need to back up to number 6 for the. So I apologize for that.
Thank you, Michael Wixom, for the record special and chief counsel. I think if you go to the language of the agenda item itself, that would be sufficient. So you can accept the audit in draft form with the understanding that the final audit will be coming back for final approval.
Okay. With that wording, do I have a motion? Regent Del Carlo, do I have a second?
Second.
Regent, with a second from Regent Boylan. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you, and that motion carries. Now, back to number 7. Thank you.
All right, very good. I have really said everything I needed to say about agenda item number 7. I'm ready to move on to 8 unless there's any questions.
Thank you. Next up, item number 8.
Okay. And item number 8 is the financial statements themselves of UNLV Medicine. and our report. So to summarize, our opinion is clean and modified opinion that those financial statements are fairly stated in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. There are no reportable findings in this audit, which congratulations to the team there for a job well done. There was a new accounting pronouncement that they had to adopt this year, and they did a very nice job of that as well. Happy to answer any questions on agenda item number 8.
Are there any questions on agenda item number 8? And with that, I would like to entertain a motion for the approval of the UNLV Medicine, Inc. financial statements for the year end June 30th, 2023.
So moved.
Thank you, Regent Boylan, for the motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Regent Del Carlo has the second. Thank you so much. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? And with that, the motion carries. And wow, that takes us to item number 9, new business. Any new business? And this brings us to our second public comment. Is there any public comment in ELCO?
There is no public comment in ELCO.
Is there any public comment at System Office in Reno?
There is none at this time.
Is there any public comment here in Las Vegas at UNLV? And with that, public comment on the phone from SCS?
There are no online callers at this time.
Thank you so much. And that brings us to adjournment. Thank you so much, everybody. Oh,